what is the reason that I'm going to share this information? What benefit is it going to give to my person?
You are listening to The Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness, your number one resource for practical tips and insights, empowering you and your family to live well with Alzheimer's. Hello, I'm Mike Good of Togetherness. Welcome to episode 63 of The Alzheimer's Podcast, your number one source for practical tips and insights. My goal is always to empower you and your family to maintain a positive experience, reduce and eliminate the need for medications, and make your time together with those you care for the best it can be. Sharing news with others is something we do routinely as part of our relationships, but sharing news and information, whether it's good or bad, can have unwanted, or maybe better said, unneeded, consequences for the person who is living with dementia. In this episode of Navigating Rough Terrain with the Dementia Sherpa, Christy Turner shares her expertise and wisdom to help you determine the best approach to sharing information with your person. Christy, I imagine our care partners out there often struggle with how much information, what type of information, good or bad information, do they share with their loved one with dementia? And today, I'm looking forward to learning from you on how to help them know what to share and how to share bad, particularly bad information.
Yeah, so usually none of us struggle with sharing good news, right? We're hopping up and down and clapping our hands and doing a little dance and like, yay, this great thing happened. And that's not usually an issue. Where it can be an issue for sharing it with your person is if it is something really exciting and good news, but it's way off in the future. So let's say you're getting married or your kid is getting married and it's going to be a year from now. So whenever we share information far in advance, what we are agreeing to is to have continuous conversations about that information all the way through till the event. And so some care partners are really pros at this and it doesn't faze them at all. And others can start to feel their patience sliding away like, oh my gosh, we've talked about this 40 times. And yeah, that's 40 times this morning, but there's still this afternoon and next week and next month. And so really kind of figuring out how much do I want to talk about this thing is probably a really good idea. The flip side of that is, let's say it is really happy news and your son is getting married and it's going to be a year from now and you're super excited about it and you are totally in wedding mode and you want to talk about it all the time and because they're you know, things that planning and details and all of this, and it's great and it's exciting. You just couldn't love his pick anymore. And your person could forget that this news happened, that you told this news, could forget details. And so that's where you might find yourself getting a little bit frustrated.
Okay.
Like, but I told you all of this. Well, yeah, but, and this is where we always go back to it, right? Because it's so obvious on paper, but when we're in the moment, sometimes it's hard to remember for us that because of the progressive nature of the condition, people do forget. And it doesn't mean that they love us less or that they're less excited about good news or filled with goodwill. It just means that they forget.
Right.
So when we can be gracious about it and just kind of follow our person's cue and go, okay, they don't seem to really be recalling that. No problem. You know, stay cool, bring the good stuff, right? Respect, kindness, love, empathy, and compassion. And then you might find 10 minutes into the conversation, your person's like, oh yeah. And they just immediately, like they never even forgot in the first place. And that can happen too, because you've been talking about it for a while and it's kind of cueing them and reminding them.
Okay. You mentioned cueing, and I believe we've talked about that in a prior episode. And can you just kind of give us a quick reminder about how that queuing process works as we help them remember and we give them the time to remember, if in fact we are expecting them to have this conversation with us.
So, yeah, that's a good point, is we can always use little refreshers in our own head, right? So what we want to do is not use words like, remember, don't you remember? I told you last week, because no, our person doesn't remember. So let's stick with the wedding example, because my nephew just got married, so I still have wedding on the brain. But let's say it's a wedding, right? So, and you're going to see your mom like you usually do, and you're kind of in the midst of helping with the wedding too, planning. And so maybe you have a bride's magazine with you that you bring into the visit, or some type of visual cue that sets the tone for, you know, you ask your mom, hey, how's it going? And, oh, I'm helping with planning Alex's wedding. What? Alex is getting married? Oh, yes, he's marrying Courtney and we're so excited. Oh, well, I didn't know that was happening. How come nobody told me? And that's where we get tempted right there, because then we're feeling like we've been accused of something.
Okay.
Like, I did tell you, we get defensive. So, and it's a very natural thing.
Right. We had shared that good news and we're expecting that conversation to follow up, and now that's fallen apart and we have the stress of the wedding and all going on, but now our loved one's not remembering.
Right. Yeah, so instead of saying, well, how come nobody told me? I mean, when your person might say something like that, like, why didn't anybody tell me? Just say, well, I'm really excited to talk to you about it right now. That's why I brought this magazine in. I thought we could look at some things together.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So acknowledge, you know, but you don't have to jump in and feel like you have to defend yourself, because then the conversation can start to go in a direction that's not positive, and that's not where we want to go.
Right. I like that approach, because that brings up, that's that acceptance and that, you know, being in the reality with them, right? And we've talked about that many times, and that turns that, what could have been a contentious negative situation, turns it back into a positive situation, which, as you mentioned once, those are the moments that we're going to remember forever, and that's why it's so important. So, Christy, so breaking the good news is something we all enjoy doing, and we, again, look forward to that conversation, but breaking the bad news, I've seen that done before in a care home, and it's with mixed, and doesn't necessarily have good results. So what is our strategies there?
It often doesn't have good results, and so that is something to keep in mind. I like to kind of take a step back when we're talking about bad news. And so many of our listeners, like, their head may have immediately gone to breaking the news of a death in the family, right? Which is something we'll definitely get to. But before we get to that, I wanted to mention that sometimes it's not always like bad news on that level, but let's say that you've always had a very close relationship with your mom, and you talked several times a week, and you could tell her anything, and that could be that you were fighting with your partner, or that things aren't going well at work, or your kids are on your last nerve, whatever it is, right? And now your mom is showing signs of difficulty with processing that information, or seems to be getting upset with hearing that kind of information. So keeping that in mind, what I like to do is just, like, let's take a step back and ask ourselves a couple of questions. So one is sharing this information the kindest, most loving thing I could do? And if the answer is no, then we want to think very carefully about why we're sharing this information. So what is the benefit of sharing the information? And oftentimes when it's those kind of normal everyday things that I was just talking about, the benefit is for us to continue having the type of relationship we've always had. So the benefit would really be for us. And our person is clearly showing signs that it is no longer benefiting them. So that's when we need to rethink this. And in those cases, those kind of normal everyday bumps and parts of life, we need to look for other people could be close friends or other family members who can support our emotional needs, but understand that our person isn't able to do that for us anymore.
And that's probably a really hard transition to make with somebody we've been close to for all of our life, because I think the key thing of our relationship is that ability to go to a person and kind of vent and share, yes, and get it off our chest and have them show some sympathy and compassion for us and make us feel better. And I can see how we would still be wanting that feeling and that connection with our loved one. So I imagine it's a really hard transition to make for a lot of care partners.
It is, but here's the thing. You can still have that type of relationship. It's just going to look different. So instead of kind of doing the bleh, here's all the stuff that's happening, doing that verbally, because what you're looking for when you're sharing that information is typically twofold, right? One is so that some other person in your life is updated with what's going on in your life, and two, so that you can get that validation and support, and just like what you were talking about, Mike. So we're going to skip the first part, right? We're going to give those details to somebody else. And the second part, that need for comfort, we can still get that, and we just go about it differently. So if you've always been close to your mom and confided in her, and now she's not able to handle or process that information like she used to, you can still say, "Mom, I'm having one of those days where I just really need my mom. Can I get a hug?" That's easy, right?
Yes, yes.
Or if you're far away, you can, you know, call and say, I don't know what it is. I'm just having one of those days. I feel like a 4-year-old. I just knew I needed to hear your voice. People do not get angry or offended by someone saying, "I'm a little bit rattled and I just needed to hear your voice." That's a huge compliment. Right?
Exactly.
So we can still get that comfort. And we're also giving something in that situation, right? Because we're giving that huge compliment and letting our parents know that they're still a really big deal, right?
Right.
And we're not minimizing that role that they've had in our lives. So, you know, they still get to be the mom or the dad, right? In that type of setup. Now with spouses, likewise, and I think this is where I see people struggle most, because it's such a partnership, and not being able to get that validation is tough, but you can still get the comfort. Same thing, walk up and hug them and just say, you know, I just really need to feel your arms around me right now. Or, you know, hold hands, look at each other. Nobody makes me feel as good as you make me feel. Or I'm so grateful that I'm sitting here next to you right now. Or, you know what the smartest thing I ever did was? It was the day I married you. We're still getting comfort, and we are giving a lot in that moment too.
Great examples, and I hope our care partners out there do that, as opposed to just dumping information on our loved ones. I think that sounds like a much more pleasant and memorable outcome.
I think it's a much better outcome. I also think for a care partner, sometimes because there are so many moving parts, right, yeah, to being a care partner, number one, and then number two, whatever other role you're doing in your life. So that could be, you know, if it's your parent with dementia, you could be, you know, managing your own family. You might have kids still at home, or maybe kids that just went to college there, or working outside the home. There are so many other roles that each of us play every day. And sometimes it can feel like juggling chainsaws. So we just get overwhelmed and kind of by default, by rote, go into those old neural pathways where I'm just going to blurt everything to my mom because that's what I've always done, without really thinking through, like, that might not be the best idea right now.
Right. And if anyone ever does that to you, you know that your blood pressure usually starts to creep up a little bit too, right? Because you start to absorb their energy, as we've discussed before.
Exactly.
And with your approach, we're actually bringing switching it and bringing that positive energy through the hug or through the compliments and what we say to them, much better right. outcome.
So on that positive note, that seems like a good time to transition to talking about death, right?
Yeah. Right. Which with death is, you know, maybe there's a recent death, but something I've also seen is like when a spouse or, you know, forgets that their loved one has passed away or someone's, you know, has passed away for years, there's a tendency to want to tell them over and over again, right? So we have a couple of different scenarios there.
Right. So one important thing to know is that when we're talking about dementia, most people living with dementia, about 60 to 80% of people living with dementia, have Alzheimer's.
Okay.
So that's going to be different than if we're talking about vascular dementia or dementia with Lewy bodies or frontotemporal dementia, typically. So, and the reason why is with Alzheimer's, it has a really predictable course, and we know that people are going to move backwards in time through their memories. So what can happen there is, let's say that, let's say Jane has Alzheimer's and her husband, Joe, died 25 years ago. And she went on and had it was devastating, but she had, good quality of life for another 15 years. Then she developed Alzheimer's. And so now here we are. And one day she starts asking, where's Joe? Because now, with the course of the disease progression, she's moved back into time, and it's reasonable in her brain to ask where Joe is because Joe should be around. That's where it gets really tricky for families. And again, it's just kind of in that moment, typically we think, like, what do you mean, where's Joe? He died. What? And it's that devastation that we don't want to cause all over again, because we don't want someone to have that feeling of being hit by a bus all over again, that immediate shock and devastation that happens right after a death.
Right. Plus, they probably, the likelihood they won't believe you either, right? Because they'll be like, well, I just saw him this morning, or...
Yeah, it could go a few different ways. So right. That could be one reaction. Another reaction that is pretty common is, what? When did this happen? Why didn't anybody tell me? And because usually when somebody says, when did this happen? That's typically when the family, again, not having had this experience before, says something like 25 years ago.
Oh.
And so then there's the, what? My husband died 25 years ago and nobody told me? You've been keeping it a secret from me? So you can see how quickly the situation can go poorly.
Right. Right.
Right. And create just a lot of bad feelings and a lot of chaos and upset. So in that case, we might want to say something like, you know, where's Joe? You might look at your watch and go, huh, it's about what, 10 a.m. Where is he usually at 10 a.m.? And so what you're doing is kind of floating it out there to see what the response is going to be. And so the person might say, oh, well, he'd be at work. Oh, yeah, he's probably at work.
Okay.
Move on to the next thing, right? Or then it could be something like, well, I don't know where he usually is at 10, but I want him. Where is he? In that case, the person's sending you signals that they're more upset, right? Something is bothering them. So this is where we really need to tune into the emotions behind the words and try and figure out, well, what's really bothering them? And it could be that they're feeling an intense longing for this person, or they have forgotten the information of the person died, but there's something kind of tickling the side of their brain. Like, I think something isn't right with this situation, but I can't figure out exactly what it is. And in that situation, a lot of times looking at pictures can be really helpful. So sometimes, you know, I don't know where Joe usually is at 10 a.m., but I need to see him. Where is he? Oh, this is Joe right here in this picture, right? That looks like your wedding picture. You sure are a beautiful bride. kind of, again, you don't want to throw a whole bunch of stuff out there at one time, but kind of, again, in a very kind, gentle way, offer some additional kind of arrows toward a different path, right? In this case, you'd be using a picture as a visual cue, and then see where that leads the person. So it might be like, okay, yes, Joe did exist. I see him right here in the picture, right? Yes, we're very happy. That can change the emotional state. And then you can get somebody talking about that person. And kind of a lot of times what the person really needs is to just express their feelings. And they have lost the ability to do that in the way that we would normally do it when dementia isn't present. For example, like Tuesday was the third anniversary of my dad's death. And so I could say, you know, gosh, I'm really thinking about my dad today and I miss him so much. And I could start a conversation with somebody that way because I'm not cognitively impaired. But for a cognitively impaired person, they might not still have the language or the ability to make a sentence construct that sounds like that, that's more direct. Does that make sense?
It does to me, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is what I'm thinking is this is another one of those instances where it's a good idea to maybe rehearse this.
Yes.
To a mirror or to another friend, or I know because you do that successfully with your clients and we've talked about that before, but this is definitely one of those places where it's just not how we normally engage in conversation. So we need to practice and retrain ourselves how to kind of lead that conversation to help them get the answers and the feelings that they're searching for.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay.
So I said this different, you know, with different types of dementia. And the reason why is like with vascular dementia or dementia with Lewy bodies, a lot of times somebody will be confused about a certain fact or piece of information or topic at 10 a.m. and then at 10:10 a.m. they're completely clear again on that particular issue.
Okay.
So sometimes, you know, it might be sometimes somebody forgets and then, you know, within moments they're right back, like they remember again and it all, everything's kind of snapped back into place for them. So that's why I do advise, you know, taking that step back first of looking at like, what's the kindest, most loving thing I can do here? And then to what benefit, what is the reason that I'm going to share this information? What benefit is it going to give to my person? And when we're talking about a more recent death, that I honestly believe there is no right answer there.
Okay.
There really isn't. Except, I always have my exception, right? Except, again, what's the kindest, most loving thing I can do right now? And, you know, for example, I talked to one of our listeners, actually, I can't remember her name off the top of my head, which I'm sure is okay, but a few months ago, who had a situation where her dad was getting ready to pass and her mom has dementia. And she was kind of trying to figure out this very issue, you know, what should I do? Because I don't want to blow this. This is a really significant event. My parents have been married for, I don't remember, it was something like 60 years, 65 years, something like that. And the way she was handling it, I was completely in agreement with, because they were in a community where her dad was in a different area than her mom, but her mom could visit him. And so they would support her in going to visit him and see him. And her mom was at a part in the process where she would say things like, I don't think he's doing very well, or he doesn't look very good. And so the family would say to the mom, yeah, he's really not doing very good. So they validated what she was observing and what she was saying. And then as it got closer, you know, pretty hospice was involved and had given them a heads up, they were able to offer her the opportunity, and the hospice team had been involved with the mom too, as far as supporting her. And just let her know, it seems like it's pretty close. And they happened to have a strong faith. And so just said, it looks pretty close, like he's going to pass away and go to heaven. And, would you like to come say goodbye? And so they were able to handle it in that way. And that was okay.
And I think a lot of families in that instance might try to shield her from that situation, because a lot of people feel that we don't want our loved ones to feel the sadness, we don't want them to cry. But as I've been taught, maybe by you, they have a right to feel emotion and to feel and to cry, and we do not want to necessarily shield them just because of that,
right? So and especially when we're talking about a significant relationship that's been this major part of somebody's life. Now, that said, I'm definitely not one to advocate for if somebody's seems just who is this person? Like they don't even recognize them anymore. I'm not sure what benefit that would be to either party, right? Say, no, you need to come see them. No, that's not true either. But dementia is not a cure for emotions. And people living with dementia, of course, have the right to feel sad and to cry and to grieve. And that's a normal part of life, no matter what other condition somebody may have. That's what we do. We're sad when somebody we love dies. And playing it by ear is one of those, it's a really necessary component in this situation. It's also something that is really tough if you're super close to your dad, right? And then trained to manage the situation with your mom. So this is, in my experience, this is where the son-in-law or the daughter-in-law or somebody like that comes in beautifully, because they're just that one step removed enough. I mean, they're part of the family, right? But they've got just that one degree of separation that allows them to help with this and to be able to support you and support the person living with dementia and to be the one that kind of is more of a companion to them during this time, which is really important because so many people in the situation need support all at the same time. We've got to take that into account. We're probably not going to be our very best when we are going through emotional devastation too. And yet when we share information like this, we are tacitly agreeing that we're going to be open and willing and available to continue talking about it as long as our person needs to, right? Because they may not remember. Or they may remember, they might be showing signs of feeling sad, but aren't able to verbalize why. It's because they're feeling it, but they just don't necessarily have the words to communicate that.
Well, Christy, we are up at the end of the time now, but in this scenario, so if quickly in this scenario where the lady, she got to say her goodbyes, I guess, if you will, and now, but then the next day after he's passed on, she's maybe expecting to go visit him, or, we're kind of early. It's not where he's been passed away for 25 years. He's only been maybe a day or two. Is there any different technique, or is it pretty much similar to what you described in the other scenario?
Well, I think you can use, if possible, use the visual cue of, if it happened in the home, right, and it's easily accessible, to go in there and say, kind of in the course of having a conversation, well, yeah, we came in here yesterday to see him, and he was really sick. He wasn't doing very well. And the doctors told us that they didn't think, and so you can kind of slowly, right?
Okay.
Don't succumb to the perverse urge to have a rush of words.
Right.
Kind of slowly and watch, be watching the person carefully to see where, and they may very well go, oh yeah, I I guess I forgot because I wanted to forget, or something like that. That I've seen that happen many, many times. So again, you just want to be very gentle. And this does happen quite frequently right after a passing, where the person with dementia will bring up that deceased loved one's name a lot, or topics related to them, and without directly saying that they died. And sometimes they need a little gentle reminder. And then what tends to happen, and the time period varies, for some people it's within a week, for some people it's within a month, for some it's a little bit longer, they often kind of forget that it happened. And they're far enough in the process that they'll say, "Hey, should we go visit Joe?" And you can say, "Oh, I don't think Joe's available for visitors today." "Oh, okay." And they move on to something else. So again, this is where you really, as a care partner, you have the expert knowledge of your person. You are the expert in your person, and you just need to use that in reading where they're coming from and following their cues, following their lead. And as always, as we always say, right, you're going to bring the good stuff. So you're just going to be kind and compassionate and empathetic, and see where that takes you. And so this is unfortunately another one of those things that's very difficult, and there is no exact right answer. But if you bring the good stuff, you're never going to land on the wrong side of anything.
Thank you, Christy, for joining us again for another great conversation of navigating rough terrain with the dementia Sherpa. And I hope our care partners found some strategies and wisdom from you today. Be sure to reach out to Christy at dementiasherpa.com, and I will put a link to her website on the show notes. So thanks again, Christy.
Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This concludes our conversation with Christy Turner, the Dementia Sherpa, right here on the Alzheimer's Podcast, your number one source for practical tips and insights. So remember to ask yourself, is this the kindest, most loving thing I can do for my person, before you start sharing good or bad news with them? Be sure to check out the show notes for any mentioned resources or links at togetherinthis.com/episode63. I hope you return next week when Christy and I will discuss how to figure out why your person is doing something. Goodbye. You've been listening to the Alzheimer's Podcast with Mike Good of Togetherness. For more information and to get the resources mentioned in this episode, visit togetherinthis.com/podcast.